Two travelers, friends, brothers, husband and wife. We have no idea, just two disciples, Cleopas and someone, walking home to Emmaus. Perhaps the reason one traveler remains unidentified is to allow us to put ourselves into the story. Cleopas and Steve, out on the road home to Emmaus. Followers of Jesus, walking on the corner of Latham in South Florida. People just like us on their way home. They had the same concerns that have been common in every age. Holding life together, keeping an eye on their family and beloved friends, keeping up as best as they can with their responsibilities, and now keeping a stiff upper lip in the face of crushed hopes and shattered dreams. People just like us. Probably religious folk, just like us, having walked the 7 miles, a personal 11K walk to Jerusalem a few days before. They'd gone to Jerusalem for the Passover, an event no good Jew would miss, and perhaps they were excited to be near Jesus, the one whom they had come to look on as Israel's deliverer, the Messiah. But now they were going home, dejected, depressed, defeated. And as they walked, they talked. They were talking about the latest news, not the latest political poll or the NFL draft, but most likely about their beloved friend Jesus and the events of the past week. Was it really wise for Jesus to have come into Jerusalem knowing the authorities were out to get him? Why did he take such a risk that day in the temple, overturning the money changers' tables and shouting at the priests about the temple being a den of thieves? If only he had kept a lower profile. If only he hadn't done this. If only he had done that instead. If only. And then, unexpectedly, Cleopas and his friend are not alone. Someone is walking along with them. Hey, how's it going? Or whatever the Aramaic equivalent of that would be. The two stop dead in their tracks. How's it going? Are you kidding me? Are you the only one in Jerusalem who hasn't heard what's happened in these last few days? What things? And so the two travelers began to tell the story. And one didn't have to listen very carefully to hear their anger and their sadness and recognize their heavy heart, their disappointment with religious leaders, their distress at the political system so easily manipulated by evil persons, their despair at the loss of Jesus, someone who held their hope for the future. And along with all the rage they were venting comes this strange story. A story that they had heard from some friends about an empty tomb, a vision of angels and a risen Lord, that Jesus wasn't really dead. Makes you wonder why these two travelers left Jerusalem. You would think that news about Jesus' tomb being empty might have prompted a change in their travel plans. Unlike Thomas, who had his own doubts, apparently they didn't have to see for themselves by going to the tomb to see firsthand. It seemed as though the news of Jesus and the empty tomb was beginning to take on a life of its own. Well, let me ask you, what do you do with a story like that, with a tale about resurrection? Probably grave robbers. You don't think his disciples stole his body just to make the story about resurrection seem authentic, do you? Otherwise, why not stay in the city to see if Jesus would drop by? Never saw a dead person alive before. Maybe stay around to see what really had happened to the one who was supposed to liberate Israel from Roman oppression. I don't know. Maybe they just needed to get back home where they felt safe. Back home where they could process all that had happened. But there remains another question. What about their not knowing who Jesus was? St. Luke says that they weren't able to recognize who he was. What kept them from recognizing Jesus? Jesus reminds the two travelers of what they probably already know. Don't you see, these things had to happen? The Messiah had to suffer and only then enter into his glory? And then Jesus started at the very beginning and went through the books of Moses and all the prophets, pointing out everything in the scriptures that referred to him. It would be just like Jesus saying to us, remember what you learned in Sunday school? Remember the Bible stories? Remember God's promises? And as he talks, a glimmer of hope, a fire sparks and begins to warm their hearts. It's difficult to know just how much they understood. But by the time they had arrived at Emmaus, it was in the afternoon, and they didn't want their conversation to end. And they said to Jesus, friend, won't you stay with us, have supper with us this evening? The day's almost gone. We don't have much, just some bread and wine. But we'd love to have you. Won't you stay, please? It's amazing. When Jesus takes the honored place at the head of the table and breaks the bread and gives it to them, big-eyed, open-eyed, they recognize the risen Lord. And then as quickly as they realize who's here, he's not here. He's vanished. At any time or in any place, just like Cleopas and his friend, any of us could miss Jesus. They think they know where Jesus is, dead and buried. They're not prepared for a risen Lord who walks with them along a familiar road and speaks with them about common things. And finally, it's in the most everyday action of all, the breaking of bread in an ordinary meal, that it dawns on them who Jesus really is. That question remains. What is it that keeps their eyes from recognizing Jesus, the one whom we would think they would want to see more than anyone in the world? These two are followers of Jesus. They care about him. They lingered in Jerusalem after his death, taking their own lives at risk, risking their own arrest, until they heard even more confusing rumors about resurrection. And on the road, he was even the subject of their conversation. Yet they still fail to recognize him. The answer, I think, is as simple as they didn't expect to see Jesus. Even if the rumors of resurrection are true, they may have expected that Jesus would surely show up with a host of angels in a brand new, durable, eternal, unshakable kingdom of God. The last thing they expect to see is the risen Lord who walks with them on a dusty country road. They're just not ready to meet Jesus on the corner of Emmaus in South Florida. I suppose that most of the time, not many of us expect to run into Jesus. Yes, there is that God-shaped void in us that only God can fill that makes us want to worship Jesus, but on our terms, according to our expectations, and from a controlled, safe distance. Up there or out there, removed from any real influence upon our daily lives, but having Jesus on standby in case things get messy. We treat Jesus, in other words, like company at a formal dinner party and not like someone we would have coffee with at the kitchen table talking over our daily struggles and problems. Is the problem simply that we have left Jesus in the tomb? Ever visit a cemetery? They're calm, peaceful places, sometimes even tranquil places. Most often carefully kept lawns, flowers, and decorations placed by shining monuments. The whole environment is intended to express respect and serenity. Apart from the occasional funeral and the weekly pass-by with a lawnmower or the occasional serene walker, nothing ever happens in a cemetery. Leaving Jesus in a tomb, is that a good place for the resurrected Jesus? In the places of our lives where nothing much happens? I guess if you think about it for a moment, where most often life is really lived, it's there we are content to go it alone. The risen, living Lord we leave back in the tomb as Cleopas and his fellow walker thought they had left Jesus in Jerusalem. To be painfully honest, sometimes the church is like a tomb. Quiet, peaceful, serene. And people are content to meet Jesus there. In fact, we expect to meet Jesus there, but at times we think we leave Jesus there until we return or until we summon him out when life becomes difficult and we fall on our knees when life begins to crush us down. That's the faith of foxholes. But thank God, we find faith there when we need it. I learned a long time ago that if you want to find Jesus, go to where Jesus is most needed. And for all of us today, that's blessed assurance. But the message from the corner of Emmaus in South Florida is that the Lord is with us where and when we don't expect him or even invite him. From the Eastern Orthodox tradition comes the story of a man who went to an abbot who was the head of a monastery and told the abbot that he wanted to see God. How many prayers will I have to pray? How many days of fasting will I have to undergo before I see God? He asked. The abbot stood up from behind his desk and he said, "So, you want to see God? Well, come with me." And the abbot led the man down the winding corridors and dark staircases until they came at last to the kitchen, and finally through the kitchen to the place where the pots and pans were washed and scrubbed. And there, covered in grease and grime, was the meanest, lowliest, most intellectually challenged of all the monks at the monastery. And the abbot pointed at him and said, "God." Even when we least expect it, there is Jesus. When the journey is lonely, when it seems as though no one is around, there is Jesus. When we wait while we search, as we heal, when we are in pain, when we least expect it, or when we need him the most, Jesus is there. Jesus is there breaking the bread of amazing grace and pouring upon us the mercy of God's forgiveness. When we need Jesus, he is there. One of my favorite Fred Craddock stories is when he told the story of one of his breakfast experiences. He was stuck in Winnipeg, Canada, and in the midst of an early October snowstorm that paralyzed the city. Everything was shut down, and his host couldn't even make it to Fred's hotel to pick him up for breakfast. So for breakfast, Fred found himself at a crowded bus station cafe about 2 blocks from his hotel. And as he entered, somebody scooted over and let him into the booth. And a big man with a greasy apron came over to the table and asked him what he wanted. And not knowing what the cafe served, Fred asked to see a menu. And the man said, "What do you want with a menu? We have soup." Fred said, "Then I'll have soup." Just what he wanted for breakfast, soup. And the man brought the soup, and Craddock says it was an unusual-looking soup. It was gray, a little bit the color of a rodent. He didn't know what was in it, but he took his spoon and tasted it. And it was awful, and he thought to himself, "I can't eat this." So he sat in that crowded cafe, warming his hands around the bowl, complaining in his mind about the world while he was stuck in Winnipeg. Then the door opened and someone yelled, "Close the door!" And she did, and a woman came in, a middle-aged woman wearing a coat with nothing on her head. And someone scooted over and let her slide into their booth. And the big man with the greasy apron came over with the whole, and the whole cafe heard this conversation. He said, "What do you want?" She said, "May I have a glass of water?" The man brought the water and took out his tablet and repeated the question, "What do you want?" "Just the water." "Lady, you got to order something." "Just the water, please." The man's voice started rising. He said, "Lady, I've got paying customers here waiting for a place. Now order." "Please, just the water." "You can order something or you can get out." "Well, can't I stay and get warm?" "Order or get out." So she got up. And the people at the table where she was seated got up. And the people around the cafe got up. The folks that let Fred sit at the table got up. Fred got up, and they all started moving towards the door. "Okay," said the big man with the greasy apron. "She can stay." And everybody sat down. He even brought her a bowl of that soup. Fred asked the man sitting next to him, "Who is she?" The guy said, "I never saw her before. But if she ain't welcome, ain't nobody welcome." And then Craddock said all you could hear was the sound of people eating that soup. And he thought to himself, "Well, if they can eat it, I can eat it too." And he picked up his spoon and he started eating the soup. "It was good soup," he said. I ate all that soup. It was a strange soup. I don't remember ever having it before. But as I left, I remembered eating something that tasted like that. The soup that day at that cafe tasted like bread and wine." On most Sunday mornings in contemporary America, contemporary versions of Cleopas and you or me, or anyone for that matter, gather together. And today we gather in a virtual worship service. Sometimes we come walking down the road, finally walking into this beautiful sanctuary on the corner of Emmaus in South Florida. The powerful and the powerless, the chiefs and the braves, the highest and the lowest, each with their own problems, each with their own stuff to deal with, each yearning for the presence of the risen Lord and finding him here, or finding him wherever two or three are gathered in his name. But like Cleopas, his friend, or any one of us for that matter, there is a danger that once we leave our gathering or these beautiful stained glass windows, we are too preoccupied, too busy, too stressed out, too depressed, too whatever, to actually recognize that the risen Lord is with us. It's sad. Because the truth is, the risen Lord is wherever he is needed, even with us. If you want to see the living Lord, go to where he's needed the most, and there you'll find him. And walking with Jesus means trusting him with the burdens you were never intended to bear in the first place. Jesus is there. At first you may not recognize him, but then you will sense something deep inside as God warms your heart with the presence of the living Christ. And then comes the moment, magnificent and unexpected, when you see who it is. He'll vanish out of your sight. He always does. That's his way. Yet you can be assured that he remains with you. And you will see him again and again, somewhere, sometime, when you need to see him.